When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. The Devil's Playground. The exorcism of Roland Doe. The darkness gathers, and with it, the whispers. I'm Raven Vale, and this is Whispers from the Dark. Tonight, we journey to a seemingly innocuous time and place. The post-war American suburbs, a time of burgeoning prosperity and quiet family life. We are heading to Cottage City, Maryland, in 1949, where the innocent curiosity of a teenage boy would inadvertently open a doorway to unimaginable evil, plunging his family into a terrifying struggle against an unseen force and inspiring one of the most iconic horror stories of all time, The Exorcist. This is the chilling, true account of Roland Doe. Roland Doe is the pseudonym given to the boy at the center of this terrifying ordeal, a choice made to protect his identity and ensure his privacy after the horrific events he endured. Born in 1935, Roland was a seemingly normal 13-year-old, though sometimes cited as 14, an only child growing up in a German Lutheran family. He was described as a bright, active boy, with no history of behavioral problems or mental illness. His life seemed entirely unremarkable until January 1949. The catalyst for the nightmare, as many sources claim, was a Ouija board. Roland's spiritualist aunt, Harriet, reportedly introduced him to the board. Whether it was a playful diversion or a serious attempt to contact spirits, the exact nature of their sessions remains shrouded in mystery. However, shortly after Aunt Harriet's death in January 1949, strange occurrences began in the family home, focusing almost exclusively on Roland. It started subtly, as these things often do. The family reported hearing inexplicable scratching sounds emanating from within the walls and floors of Roland's bedroom. They heard the faint, rhythmic sound of water dripping, even when no pipes were leaking. Objects in the room would occasionally shift or move on their own, seemingly nudged by unseen hands. Roland's bed, the very place of his rest, would sometimes shake violently, even when no one was touching it. The family initially tried to rationalize these events, thinking it might be a rodent infestation, plumbing issues, or perhaps their own grief over Aunt Harriet's passing. But the phenomena rapidly escalated, becoming overtly malevolent and deeply personal. The poltergeist activity became more aggressive. Furniture would overturn, heavy objects would fly across rooms with destructive force, and entire pieces of furniture would slide across the floor. Roland himself became the target of physical attacks. He would wake up with inexplicable scratches, welts, and bruises on his body, often appearing spontaneously before terrified witnesses. His family and even outside observers saw these marks appear on his skin without any visible means of infliction. The manifestations took a terrifying leap when a disembodied, guttural voice began to emanate from Roland or the room around him. This voice was unlike his own. It was deep, rasping, filled with malice and a profound hatred. It would curse, blaspheme, and taunt the family. During these episodes, Roland would often enter a trance-like state, screaming, thrashing violently, and exhibiting a raw, aggressive behavior completely alien to his normal personality. He would later have no memory of these terrifying outbursts. Desperate and terrified, Roland's family first sought help from medical professionals, including doctors and psychiatrists. They performed countless tests, searching for neurological conditions, psychological disorders, anything that could explain Roland's horrifying symptoms. All tests came back negative. There was no medical diagnosis that could account for the violent physical phenomena or the profound shifts in his personality. The family then turned to their Lutheran minister, Reverend Luther Miles Schulze. He witnessed some of the bizarre occurrences himself, including Roland's bed shaking uncontrollably and the boy being violently ejected from a chair. Convinced that something beyond his understanding was at play, Reverend Schulze urged the family to seek assistance from the Catholic Church. Their pleas eventually reached the attention of Father E. Albert Hughes, a Catholic priest. Father Hughes witnessed the activity firsthand, a telephone flying off his desk during a conversation with Roland, the temperature in his office plummeting, and Roland speaking in Latin. Convinced, Father Hughes obtained permission from the local archbishop to perform an exorcism. He attempted the rite, but it was brutally interrupted when Roland, displaying incredible strength, broke off a piece of a bedspring he was strapped to and slashed Father Hughes, severing arteries in his arm and requiring over 100 stitches. The exorcism attempt was aborted. Following this violent incident, and guided by a mysterious message that appeared in welts on Roland's chest, spelling Lewis, which his mother interpreted as St. Louis, where they had relatives, the family moved to St. Louis, Missouri. Here, the torment continued. The Glatzel family, relatives in St. Louis, witnessed the horrifying phenomena firsthand. They sought further help from the Jesuit order. The case eventually came to the attention of Father William S. Bowden, a respected Jesuit priest and pastor of St. Francis Xavier College Church. He, along with Father William Van Roo, a scholastic from St. Louis University, and later joined by Father Walter Halloran, another Jesuit, undertook the daunting task of performing a formal exorcism on Roland Doe. What followed was a grueling, protracted battle that would last for several weeks, unfolding in various locations, the family home, a rectory, and eventually the psychiatric wing of the Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis to provide a more controlled environment and medical oversight. The exorcism sessions were horrific. Roland was often strapped to a bed, his body writhing and contorting with impossible strength, requiring multiple men to restrain him. He would curse and spit at the priests, his voice a guttural roar, speaking in languages he had no earthly knowledge of, including Latin. He would vomit and urinate during the rites. The room itself would reportedly shake, objects would fly, and the bed would slide violently across the floor, even knocking priests over. But perhaps the most chilling and undeniable manifestations were the spontaneous carvings on Roland's skin. During the exorcism attempts, words and symbols would inexplicably appear on his body, seemingly etched into his flesh without any visible instrument. Witnesses, including the priests, documented the chilling appearance of red welts that formed specific words, most famously the word hell, which would spontaneously appear on his chest or limbs. Other symbols, like an X, or patterns resembling pitchforks, also appeared, leaving his body raw and tender. These horrifying markings served as tangible, terrifying proof of an unseen, malevolent force at work. The battle reached its climax around Easter Sunday, April 18, 1949. The priests, exhausted but relentless, pushed through the final stages of the rite. The demonic entity, in one last, furious surge of violence, thrashed Roland violently, causing his bed to shake with terrifying force. A loud, shotgun-like blast was heard, reportedly from the room, as Roland shook uncontrollably, his body seizing, and then, abruptly, it was over. The violence ceased. The demonic voice was silenced. Roland opened his eyes, seemingly calm, disoriented, but finally free. The Catholic Church maintained strict secrecy around the case, but details eventually surfaced. The raw, terrifying accounts from the priest's diaries and reports would later reach the ears of author William Peter Blatty, who, after extensive research and interviews with those involved, transformed the harrowing true story into his best-selling novel, The Exorcist. The book, and its iconic 1973 film adaptation, brought the terrifying ordeal of Roland Doe to a global audience, embedding its chilling details into popular culture and forever changing the public perception of demonic possession. The case of Roland Doe continues to be debated. For believers, it is one of the strongest cases of genuine demonic possession, corroborated by numerous witnesses, including highly credible clergy, and documented with terrifying precision. For skeptics, it remains a tragic instance of a young boy suffering from a severe psychological condition, perhaps a rare form of psychosis, exacerbated by suggestibility and interpreted through a religious framework. They might argue that the physical phenomena were self-inflicted or misinterpreted in moments of extreme stress and fear. What truly happened to Roland Doe in 1949, dear listeners? Did a simple Ouija board truly open a doorway to hell, allowing malevolent entities to invade the innocent body of a child? Were the spontaneous carvings on his flesh a testament to the direct, horrifying power of a demon etching its malice into his very skin? Or was it a tragic, complex interplay of adolescent vulnerability, psychological distress, and profound spiritual belief that manifested as an unspeakable horror? The legacy of Roland Doe's exorcism reminds us that sometimes the most terrifying battles are not fought on battlefields, but in bedrooms, against unseen forces that leave indelible marks on the body and on the soul, forever whispering the chilling question, is this really happening? Until next time, when the whispers grow louder, good night.